And so if folks have not yet met Dana Emerson, she is our new vice president. And I don't remember her full title. It was in the invite. Maybe she could share that with us. But the purpose of our time today is we wanted to get to know Dana, and she would like us to call her Dana, I believe. And so we're going to do more of a conversation versus an interview. So we're excited to get this started. So just so you know, we've muted everybody, I believe. And if and only if there is time at the end, we may have some time for questions, but for the most part, it will be a conversation. And hopefully it will be very informative and inspiring. So thank you and welcome, Dana, to College of Marin. We just wanted to start off asking, tell us about where you grew up.
Wow. Well, thank you all so much and good morning. And let's get the title thing done, right? Because this title is really long, right? So my official title is Assistant Superintendent, Vice President of Student Learning and Success at the College of Marin. And amazingly, that all fits on a business card. I don't know how, I mean, the magic of like graphic design. It's amazing. So that is my title. So where did I grow up? Wow, this is amazing. So I grew up in Inglewood, California, which is in South Central LA. And if you heard anything about South Central LA, it's all true and then some. Right. So I, like many people in my neighborhood, grew up very, very poor, if we can still use that term, right, to describe our socioeconomic status. I didn't think I came from a large family, but I have three brothers and one sister. So maybe that's large, but one of those brothers is a twin brother. So I am a twin, which is really interesting as well, because when I tell people that I'm a twin and I have a twin brother, the first question they ask is, well, are you identical? And I just kind of let that sit for a minute and go, wow, maybe biology class wasn't your strong suit, right? So that's where I come from. I single parent home. My mom did the best that she could working with all of these children. But more importantly, our family beyond, the nuclear family, like my grandparents and my aunts and uncles and cousins, we were all very, very tight and very supportive. And my grandparents were super deliberate about making sure that their grandchildren went to college. There were no options, right? So that's what it was. But even though I grew up in public housing, because we didn't know any better, I felt like my childhood was normal, except maybe for some of the violence, that I experienced. But outside of that, yeah, playing on the front yard, picking fruit off of the neighbor's tree when you weren't supposed to, and running and eating it and things like that, eating a lot of candy, playing in the sprinkler, drinking out the water hose, all of those fun things that we did as kids.
Oh, thanks so much for sharing. And so tell us about your recent transition to from Southern California to Northern California. Likely it's a big change. What's it like to call Marin County your new home?
Yeah, so it has been a big change. I mean, the Southern California and Northern California definitely operate on different vibes, right? Southern California is hyper competitive. Even just, driving. This is my lane. You can't get in, and if you do, I'm going to beat you to everything. But Northern California is, to me, it leads with policy and politics. About what is the right thing to do, what is the best thing to do, and how it is that we can actually do those things. So that's a big difference. The weather is different. When I lived in Southern California, I lived about 4 miles from the beach. And when I say the beach, I mean the beach, not the coast. But I will say this. Once upon a time, I lived in Oregon, and I lived in Oregon for about 10 years. So landing here in Marin, and I say this often, and every time I do, people go like, "Yeah, I get it." It's like Southern California and Oregon had a baby, and it's Marin County, right? Right. So that's how it feels to me. So as much as it's unfamiliar, there is a sense of familiarity about being here from my years being in Oregon. Marin County, and particularly in Novato, it's not as rural as Oregon, where I lived in Oregon, but it still has that sense of small town, being sustainable, caring about the environment, the ecology of living first, then all of the other stuff that comes with it. So that has been a challenge. But I have to say this, I had no idea it was this hot up here. Like when I moved a month ago, I had no idea it was this hot up here. And it is a game changer because I'm going, well, where are the air conditioners? But they're in a grocery store, so that's where you go.
I think it has been unusually hot, more than you the normal. So, but welcome to Marin County. So
Thank
now,
you.
yeah, and I'm sorry about your not having your title ready to read out. Sorry about
That's
that.
okay. It's long and complicated.
Yeah. And now that you're a month into your role, what are some of your first impressions of College Marin? And I think before you might have visited just a few times, any big surprises?
I still get lost on the Kentville campus, and I want to blame it on the construction, but I think it's just because, like, literally, I'm just directionally challenged. I probably need to put on my Waze map, that to just walk around campus. But that it's a small campus, but it has so much there. You don't realize it, right? It's like the stacking dolls, right? Like you take off one layer and you're like, oh wait, there's still more, and you take off another layer and there's still more. So I feel like I'm still getting acclimated to the campus. But then there's the Novato campus, there's IVC, which who knew there was so much wildlife right there just waiting to greet you. So there's a difference there as well. But one of the things that I find most attractive about the College of Marin is how many students are still on site. Post-pandemic, most of the California community colleges have lost a significant number of their students wanting to take classes on site. And at the College of Marin, when I'm in my office and my window is right there looking out at the AC quad, I see students all day long, even into the evening. And so it just warms my heart to know that students still find value in wanting to be on campus, which then I feel like makes our jobs more meaningful. Because we can actually see and talk to the students face to face as if the pandemic didn't happen. So that has been an amazing joy for me being at the College of Marin thus far. So that's a huge surprise, and it's a pleasant surprise, and I hope that it continues.
Yeah, I think I can speak for most of the comm community that having not been able to come together in person has made us treasure those opportunities even more. And I think for the class of professionals as well, when we put on some in-person events, we do see a lot of participation and a lot of expression of, hey, it's so good to see you face to face, not behind a screen, not remote setting, or whatnot. And so I think that is something we've all grown to appreciate, including the students. And I hear that from students too, that they're specifically looking for in-person classes, especially for certain classes like science classes or math classes where they can interact with the
Right.
instructors. So definitely with you on that. And then also because I work in the Welcome Center and close to the outreach department, we can re-invite you again for a tour because we actually do tours. I know you had one when you interviewed, but you're welcome to come for another tour. We'll have a student or staff take you around.
Well, thank you.
So next question is, what can you tell us about what led you into higher education?
Yeah, so kind of going back to where I grew up, right? It was a challenged neighborhood, right? It was a challenged community, meaning that I don't think anyone outside of my family that lived on my block actually went to college. That just wasn't a thing, right? The big challenge was to either stay alive or stay out of jail, right? However, my background with my family on my mom's side, my grandfather was an OBGYN, my grandmother was a nurse, and then on my dad's side of the family, my grandfather didn't get his high school diploma until he was 62 years old, right? And so there was this really big gap between access to higher ed and just engaging it. So my mom's parents were very deliberate. You will go to college. But on the other side, my dad's parents were as well, because my grandfather recognized the limitations with his I guess job opportunities, right? By waiting and not being able to secure his high school diploma until he was 62 years old. So higher education then became this thing that was required in my family. And it was something that I looked forward to. So even though my grandparents were limited, my aunts and uncles and my mom, they all had higher education in their background. But what was unique and specific for me was the idea of community college, because community college, I came to learn, is the entry place into higher education for people who don't believe higher education is attainable for them, right? Like, you graduate from high school, you don't know what to do, or maybe you don't graduate from high school and you earn a GED and you're just not sure what's going on. You enter the workforce, it may not be what you want. But to me, community college is where you learn that you can do and become anything you want, right? At the university, you become a number right off the bat. You get thrown into a lecture hall with like 300 other students. There's no real personal relationship that you have with the people that you count on to help you get to your academic and career goals. Community college is very different in that regard. We see the faces of our students, we know their names, they know our names. And so, higher education for me became the place where you actually start creating a pathway of success for all people, right? Even if it's those students who came to the community college, who started off as student workers, who then transitioned into a staff position, right? And then they're working their way up and advancing through that. It is literally the place where we can see success, measure success, obtain success, and just keep it moving, and then offer it up to other people. So that is my relationship to higher ed. I am wedded to the community college system and to higher education for all of the opportunity that it provides to the communities that we serve.
Yeah, I think even in our midst, we have several College Marin alumni who have come back to be staff, and some others have, moved up the ranks. So definitely resonate with that. You might have touched on this a little bit already, but like, what brings you joy about working in community colleges, higher education, just working with students?
Yeah, the joy is really seeing that transformation, right? Is that, I was a professor for like, 15 years, and I remember like the first day of class, and students would come in and they'd be frightened, right? I mean, what they didn't know was that, professors are frightened too, right? Because it's always, if the first day is the first day for everybody, Right. And we're all like, oh, we're going to make mistakes and we hope that we don't. And, but to watch the transformation of someone who is reticent, who's just a little scared, a little withdrawn, actually blossom into this, the uniqueness that they bring to the world, to society. It happens right before your eyes. And all of a sudden they start to speak different. They move different. They ask different questions. And then you realize, yes, that distance between me and them is shrinking every single day. And now we are unique in our relationship because we're level, right? There is no hierarchy. And so that is absolutely amazing to me, right? When they start off with, oh, Dr. Emerson, and then we just morph into, hey, Dana, hey, John, hey, And so it really is that we become unique in our relationship, that we're just unique individuals as opposed to occupying space with titles. We then understand that we can learn from each other, and we do. And we put what we've learned from each other into practice, and it just makes us better as human beings. And that's what just, I don't know, that just, it makes me so happy. I almost have no words for it right now, because it's an experience that you know it when it's happening, right? You see the advancement of individuals, and you're just sitting there just going, I can't believe it. And then for someone to come back and maybe even thank you for participating in their growth, or showing them a pathway, or creating an opportunity for them that they didn't think that they were one worthy of having, or they didn't know existed. That is everything, right? I often refer to those as stealth rewards, right? It's those rewards that are happening. You don't even know what's happening until someone comes back to let you know that it has happened. So that's what that is, that's the joy of it all. I'm here to serve. I know this. I know that my position in this lifetime is about service. And this is the best way for me to do it.
Awesome. I think I'm curious if, in your experience with students, do you see that transformation within the semester, the course in the course of the semester, or does it take longer?
Sometimes it happens within the semester. Sometimes it takes longer. I mean, I started teaching years ago, but I still have relationships with some of my first students. We're still tracking, like, as they've become parents and, and have built their lives, and you just continue to see that growth. And they just continue to say, it's this relationship that reminds me that I can keep going, and nuggets to share with my children and my nieces and nephews and the community. And I will say, so many of those students that I'm so still deeply connected to are now working in higher education as well, because they also understand, how beneficial it is to just have a space with people in that regard. So, yeah.
And I hope that I know for us as classified professionals, we all play very different roles, of course, supporting students and supporting different facets of the college. And my hope, is that we can also witness some of that transformation from the students. Maybe a few of us have, stories where folks have come back, students have come back and share with us. That doesn't always happen, but I hope that can. That can spill over so that as a community we can celebrate that. Maybe
Well,
that's the message.
you all are the first line, right? Students see you before they see anybody else, right? And so you probably don't realize that here's one of those stealth rewards, right? That the fact that you bring kindness to that first interaction changes everything for that student. It changes the way they walk into their classes. It changes the way they browse the bookstore. It changes the way that they seek parking. I mean, you have no idea how much that initial interaction has just an effect that just ripples and is distributed, across their lifetime after that one moment. So you, I want to say this, just because you don't see it doesn't mean it's not happening.
That's a good point. I hope that's a word of encouragement for all of us who sometimes don't get that feedback, or at least not very often. And we've talked a lot about what brings you joy. Any frustrations about this kind of work briefly?
I think there's always frustrations, right? With things like, the learning curve is real for us too, right? The learning curve is real for me. Just trying to learn the College of Marin in such a short period of time is can be frustrating because we bring our knowledge and our experiences with us to every new situation. And when things are different, you have to learn all over again. But the time to learn it gets quicker and quicker and quicker, right? Or I should say the duration is shorter and shorter. So what it took you maybe 10 years to learn at your last position, now you have 10 days to learn in your new position, right? And so that can be frustrating. That can be frustrating. Or when I feel like I wasn't able to achieve the outcomes for students that I absolutely wanted to achieve for them. That can also be frustrating, but those are the biggest frustrations. It's like, oh, I don't know if I have enough time to learn this because, I'm still like a student in that regard. I want to do the best job possible all the time. I don't want to fail. I want to score 100 on my exam all the time. And I'm just not, I mean, and I know realistically that's not possible, but it doesn't change the fact that that's what I want, right? That's what I want to feel. And when I don't do that, it is frustrating, and it helps to remind me that we're all operating with this idea that we want to be successful. However, success is also dependent on so many other factors. And so when the outcome doesn't show up the way that we want it, it doesn't necessarily mean that we or I didn't do the best that I could. It means that there are other things that get pulled into the situation that have an impact on the outcome. And I have to be aware of that, and I have to accept that. And then working with like staff and students and colleagues, I sometimes have to remind them of that as well. It's if we could just change the world with, just one word, we would, but it just doesn't work like that. And we have to give ourselves grace in understanding that there are other factors. Right. And sometimes that can be frustrating because it's hard to give ourselves grace to say there is room to say that, you don't control as much as you think you control.
True. I think you speak for all of us in that, it's hard to step back to look at the bigger picture, because when you're so involved, whether it's a project or a task or a charge, is like, if it doesn't go the way you want it to go, it's like, oh no, what did I do wrong? But you're right, there are a lot of different factors and folks involved that, it's a team effort, and we can all learn and grow, from our experiences. So in our
Yes.
preliminary conversation that we had before today, you said something that really resonated with me. You said your personhood shows up before your position. And can you tell us a little more about what that means to you?
Yeah, thank you. I'm so happy that that is something you picked up on because that is exactly part of the philosophy that I live with, is that we all come with titles, right? I mean, when we meet each other in the workspace, our workspace is defined by the titles. And that's all fine and wonderful, but the titles will stick around long before the person, leaves. And so I think we should reverse our engagement. And instead of engaging the title, we should engage the person first, and then we can identify with the title and the duties that go with that title and those responsibilities. But when we do it in the reverse order, when we take the title first and those duties, we often miss unique characteristics of the person, of the individual, that if we had engaged those in the primary engagement, a lot of things that happen when we're talking about duties and responsibilities and engagement and collaborations tend to just get washed away because we accept that everyone is human first. And then we all have these responsibilities that go with our work second, right? And so that's what I mean by that is your personhood shows up first. I walk into a room as Dana way before I walk into a room as Dr. Emerson or as VP Emerson or as Assistant Superintendent Emerson. I show up as Dana because this is who I have been the longest. And this is uniquely who I am. My title comes from someplace else. I don't give myself that title, right? But I do work on my character. I do work on my compassion. I do work on how I show up and choose to engage other people. So I think that should be our first engagement. We can deal with titles, job duties, and responsibilities at a different meeting. But our initial meeting, we should just share names, which is why I prefer people to just refer to me as Dana. And that's what that means.
So I know you had shared before about work, your work with classified and how you I remember that from your presentation, you know, that you let the your staff have like 30 minutes or something like that to like catch up. And I mean, I'm just wondering if you can give us any, you know, as we are a group of like classified professionals, like any tips along those lines of, because usually when we do introduce ourselves, we'll share our name, our department, or title. It's almost like it rolls off our tongue, and our title obviously becomes who we are in this space. But that's not all we are, because like you said, our titles can change and we move on. You know, others have been in this position for us and whatnot. So just wondering if you have any kind of like practical examples or tips of how we could practice that, even in a small way.
Yeah, well, I'm so glad you remembered that because this is the truth. So one, I am deeply dedicated to classified professionals. I recognize that I can't do my job and what's expected of me without the support of classified professionals. This is just the truth. This isn't, you know, me politicking or anything like that. This is just the truth of the matter, right? And so with that, I like to bring to the table that whole idea of personhood, right? So, in my previous position, that is exactly what I did every single day. I used to just kind of slowly creep in, and while they were talking, because here's what happens when you give people opportunities to just be human beings and build community, is that they strengthen their ties. And so, when things tend to go awry, they rally together to actually relieve the stress of things going awry, as opposed to pointing fingers and saying, no, this is your fault, that's your fault, right? Because collectively, they have created a community that it's built on strength, it's built on compassion, it's built on identity relationships, meaning, I know you, Sally. You know me as Dana. And so, regardless of what our titles are, we're in this together. And then we don't let our community fail or falter, right? So, we don't do the blaming, we do the collaborative work. And so, even though in our, you know, processes or practices of introducing ourselves, it's important to say your name. And then give your personhood, right? Like I like to say, yeah, I'm Dana, you know, and I grew up in Southern California. I come from a big family, you know, I have a twin brother, and this is my role my role, not who I am. This is my role at the college, right? And so that way, people tend to focus more on what I said initially after my name and the my role. They can look that up on the website. And so then hopefully you recognize me as a person first, right? And so then when you're engaging with your colleagues, I hope that's what you do as well. Call each other by the names that you want to be called by, right? Sign your emails with the names that you want people to refer to you as. Granted, we have those signature stamps, but there's space in between where you can bring in something personal about yourself and share that with other people. I see a lot of people do it with quotes. Some people do it with images, right? Some people do it with political statements. But all of those things should be spotlighted prior to your title being spotlighted.
That's a lot of good insight and something I think for all of us to kind of ponder, you know, because I feel like it maybe as part of the culture, you know, that campus culture, we don't really bring, maybe some of us do, but on the majority, I don't think we bring our personhood to our work in that direct way. So that it's an interesting thought to do something different, you know, and to maybe even go deeper to think about what is my identity, you know, outside of a college. You know, I mean, everyone's on a different journey, you know, with that, but it is a thank you for sharing that. That's I'm gonna think on that, and hopefully all of us will. So next week we have the Classified Professional Learning Day, and I'm not sure. I think everyone knows that you're going to be sharing more specifics about your role there. But we just, you know, we're curious, you know, if you could tell us what or who influenced your leadership style. I think a lot of us are resonating with how you lead, and you know, we are getting to know you. You know, we're like half an hour into our time. Thank you again for being open and sharing so much with us. But tell us about how your in leadership style, you know, how did you develop that? And who influenced you?
Yeah, well, thank you. Thank you for that question. Honestly, let me just kind of roll it back a little bit. Like, I never thought that I was a leader, you know? Like, and so one of the things that you learn, particularly when you're a faculty member, is that you can't lead unless someone volunteers to follow you. So it's the reverse, right? It's not that the leader shows up and then the followers come. It's that your followers come and then they elect you as a leader. That's the reality of the situation. So as my students started to come around and wanted more from me, they asked me to be their mentors. They asked me to be a coach for them. They would ask for letters of recommendation and areas that they believe, you know, where did I think they could benefit or change or strengthen, you know, where they saw themselves as weak. That's when your leadership starts to show up. And so, I like to refer to my leadership style as a kaleidoscope, right? You remember the kaleidoscope things? You looked in and you turned it, and it was all these broken little pieces. And no matter which way you turned it, you got a different design, right? And so that's how I like to see it. No matter where I am situated in anyone's life, it's going to be different. And so sometimes you may need me to be in front of you. Sometimes you may need me to be on the side of you. Sometimes you may need me just to be behind you and just kind of hold you up. You know, one of the things I have on my tagline, and I probably need to put that on my signature, is as I was raising my son, is I would tell him all the time, 98% of success is support. And I have your back. And I remember he would say, but what does that mean? And I say, the success that you gain is not because you're doing it all by yourself. It's because other people are creating an environment, a bubble for you to be successful. And for me, the higher you want to climb, whichever way, whichever, I guess, endpoint that is, I'm there. I'm supporting you. And so my leadership style is just that. It's a kaleidoscope. What do you need at that moment? If I can provide it for you and help you get to where it is that you want to go, that's what I'm going to do. And I think a lot of that comes from my grandfather. And I'm talking about my grandfather who didn't get his high school diploma until he was 62 years old, because he still had to raise his family without a high school diploma, right? My grandfather, I will just say just a little bit, my grandfather is Native American. And he got caught up in, a lot of stuff that was happening politically in Oklahoma, particularly in Tulsa. And he decided that he wanted to get away from all of that. And so when he was 15 years old, he lied, joined the Navy, and said he was 18. And they believed him, right? And so he went on to learn as much as he could in the Navy so that he could support the family that he left behind. And he instilled those stories in us a lot, and that the power of making just a tiny shift can bring about a beautiful outcome for another person. And so I see the kaleidoscope that way. Just doing a tiny shift can change the picture, and it can be really beautiful for another person. So that's where my leadership comes from.
Great. And I failed to ask about your family. You mentioned son. Maybe if you don't mind sharing a little bit about your family.
I have a son, and he's in Vegas. I shipped him off to college in Florida, and I have to tell you, like, the first thing that happened was Hurricane Katrina hit. Like, literally, he had been at college for like 7 days. And he called and he goes, "Hey, mom, I just want you to know we're about to have a little hurricane." I said, "What do you mean little? I was like, in comparison to what? Like, you don't know anything about hurricanes. You're from Southern California." And so, but he worked his way through, and he, let me just say something. Sometimes your children, even when they get to college, you think you're going to make the best decisions. They don't. My son was like, "Yeah, we went outside to watch." Like, no. So when other hurricanes started coming that year, he would call. He was like, "Can you send me a plane ticket? I want to come home." Like, okay, yeah, we got this. So I have one perfect son who just tries me every step of the way that he can. And from my son, I have one granddaughter, Lennox Marie, who introduced me to Bluey. Like, and when I say introduce me to Bluey, I mean she put it on her tablet, and I had to sit through countless hours of Bluey on replay over and over and over again. And her favorite Bluey was Keepy Uppy. And let me tell you, I have blown up mini balloons and played the Keepy Uppy. So that is my family. Like I said, I have three brothers and a sister, one son, multiple nieces and nephews, and just one granddaughter.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you for sharing. So let's step back a little bit. You mentioned different influences, from your family, especially your grandfather, that shaped, who you are now. And what advice would you give your younger self?
Yeah, I would tell the younger version of Dana that it's okay to cry, even when people don't want you to, because it makes them uncomfortable. If that is the emotional space that you are in, it belongs to you. It doesn't belong to someone else. And if crying is what you need to do to get through that moment, then that is exactly what you should do. And I would also then give her a big hug and just remind her that no matter what happens, she is perfect the way she shows up every single moment of every single day. And don't let anyone tell you any differently that who you are and what you bring is uniquely you. And that is the most perfect state of being. And I say that because I used to cry a lot because I was frustrated, and mostly because I had older brothers who would do like really horrible things to me, like play smother. What? Yeah, you know, the one where they put the pillow on you and they say, "Okay, we're gonna count to three, and then we're gonna take it off." No, but they didn't. So anyway, but I would cry a lot because there was a lot of things I just didn't understand. A lot of things I felt like were being asked of me that I didn't think I could actually perform, and I would cry because I didn't feel like people took the time to understand where I was in my learning journey, in my process of understanding. And then I would feel bad for crying because people would tell me to stop crying. And, you know, and so all of that, and I would just say, you know, as I look back, crying was my way of dealing, right? It was the way that I would just kind of soothe myself and just understand that what I was experiencing was bigger than me at the moment, but it didn't mean that I couldn't handle it later, you know? And so that's what I would tell. That's what I would tell my younger self is it is okay. It is completely okay.
Wow, thank you for being so vulnerable with us about that. I mean, we all go through difficult experiences, difficult things, whether it's in our personal life, work life, and just curious, like what keeps you sane and healthy when you're doing difficult work? Any self-care strategies? What keeps you motivated to keep going? Because I think a lot of us, we may still be busy. We have been through a very busy first month of the semester, and we just need some tips.
Yeah, so you know, one of the things that I do is yoga. I do a lot of yoga. I've been practicing yoga for almost 25 years now. It brings a sense of calm because what it has done for me is it has taught me how to get calm and silent within myself, right? So they always say that yoga is the art of being calm in an environment that is completely chaotic, right? And so learning how to do that is it brings it frees you. It is so freeing. So I do a lot of yoga, I do a lot of working out. I love to go hiking. I guess so. It's just being in tune, right, with being physical and being outdoors. One thing, I used to sing. I used to be in a girl group, right? And sing. And, you know, I used to be what they used to call like the hook girl, not the hooker, but the hook girl, right? For for hip hop artists who were just starting out, I would sing, you know, the hooks to their song, me and my girl group. Back in the day, and we would do that in exchange for studio time. So music is a way of definitely having me just find some joy in life, and motivates me because there's always a message. I mean, if you listen to lyrics, people are always telling stories. If you even just listen to orchestration of just instrumentals, there's still a story. If you listen carefully, you can actually hear the story. And so with that, then it's like, okay, everybody has a story. Everyone has a story that then I don't feel alone. I don't feel like, oh, nobody knows what I'm going through. Because a lot of times when I don't have words for it, there's a song that will just say it for me. And I go, ah, yes. So those are some motivating factors for me, is just being active, being outside, and music. And sour gummy bears, right?
So it sounds like you go to the things you enjoy, right? To just take care of yourself, because life is hard, work is hard, and we all need those outlets. And sounds like you have some great hobbies on the side. We've enjoyed hearing so much about you and getting to know you. And in closing, and you may have already touched on some of these things, but is there anything else about you we wouldn't know by looking at you that you can share with us?
I don't know. Like you wouldn't know. I mean, you probably didn't know that I was a singer, right? Matter of fact, at the college that I came from, I was in a band called One Credit Shy, right? And it was just made up of, the people that I work with, and we would do we would sing and play songs and for all of the events at the college, and it just became so fun. And I remember when we when I left and I said, well, we got to graduate now, like we've obtained that one credit, so it's time for us to leave, it's time for us to leave the college. So that would just be it. I mean, I really do just I love being around people. I love experiencing the energy from other people. I love walking into a room and just saying good morning and with a smile, and then just see what comes back. I just that is just something I absolutely just enjoy. And I like being me. I like being comfortable being me. And that was something I had to learn. It took a long time to learn it, but now that I have it, I'm not giving it back.
Awesome. So I think you have an invitation to the music department anytime.
I see that. Thank you.
And we do have a, I think, a college orchestra and different, musical and drama performances. And so I think you'll find yourself at home at College Marin.
I can't wait. I'm super excited about all of that. Yes, absolutely. And even going over to the athletic field, like, yes, absolutely. All of that. Yes.
Great. Well, thank you again. And we're coming to a close, and I have to say, give credit to Briar Welch. She's our current vice president of the Classified Senate, because she helped me helped we worked on these questions together. And so I don't there may have been some comments or questions in the chat. We might have a few minutes.
Sure,
If
let's look.
I don't know if Briar's available, she can
One of
take
the
over.
sort of reoccurring things in the chat here, just people just wanted to express how much you sharing that vulnerability meant to them. And somebody mentioned I'm feeling a little teary and sympathetic and support and community. And I have to say, I was feeling exactly the same way. So thank you so much for showing up and being so vulnerable with us and sharing those. Sharing those things that we don't get to talk about very frequently and are so valuable and so important and so very real to our everyday experiences. So I do want to mention
Well, thank you so
that.
much. And thank the both of you for willing to try something different, I remember when we had that meeting, and it was just like, hey, what if we did it in a way that it was really about getting to know, right, me and each other, right? And then we can always go do the other stuff later, like you said, right? Like next week. But I just want to thank you both. I mean, you've worked so hard, and I can definitely feel your presence just in the questions that you ask, because I think that's another way of you bringing yourself to this moment as well. And it's those little nuggets, right, that we often just kind of push to the side, but I want to bring them back and spotlight them and say, yes, this is how we collaborate. This is how we work together in more meaningful ways. If I trust that you have my back when I'm being vulnerable, then I want you to know that you can trust me when you're being vulnerable too. You don't have to run and hide. We can be there for each other and still do our job. So thank you. Thank you all. Thank all of you. Thank all of you for giving me this opportunity just to show up, because I don't know when we would have another opportunity like this to just get to know things about me that where else would you get this information unless I'm telling it to you?
Yeah, wonderful. And by way of announcement, so we'll see you at Classified Professional Learning Day next week. And we also have breakfast the last week of September. So I think we'll see you at one or two of the breakfasts there and for the Classified Professionals. And I think with that, it's a wrap, unless Briar or Dana had anything else to say.
No, I'm just saying thank you all so much. This is wonderful. And I'm so honored to be your first guest on your podcast, right? It's a new day for classified professionals at the College of Marin. So this is fantastic. Thank you all so much. And please, please, please have a wonderful day. And I hope to see some of you all at the Vestager later this afternoon at IVC, where, you know, Dr. Eldridge will be formally acknowledged as the president of the College of Marin.
Thank you.
All right.
And thank you everyone for joining us, and have a great day. We'll see you soon.
Bye. Take care.